The men of the lake town Esgaroth were mostly indoors, but a few were walking on the quays watching the stars shine out from the smooth patches of the lake as they opened in the sky. From their town, the lonely mountain was mostly screened by the low hills at the far end of the lake, through a gap in which the running river came down from the north. Only its high peak could they see in clear weather. Now it was lost and gone, blotted in the dark. Suddenly it flickered back to view. A brief glow touched it and faded. "Look," said one. "Lights again. Last night the watchman saw them start and fade from midnight until dawn. Something is happening up there. Perhaps the king under the mountain is forging gold."
"Which king?" said a grim voice. "As like as not it is the dragon."
"Oh, you are always foreboding gloomy things," said the others. "Think of something cheerful." Suddenly a great light appeared in the low place in the hills, and the northern end of the lake turned golden. "The king beneath the mountain," they shouted. "His wealth is like the sun. The river is running gold from the mountain." There was tremendous excitement, but the grim-faced fellow ran hot foot to the master. Bard was his name.
"The dragon is coming, or I am a fool," he cried. "Cut the bridges! To arms! To arms!"
The warning trumpets were sounded, the cheering stopped, and joy was turned to dread. So it was that the dragon did not find them quite unprepared. Now they could see him as a spark of fire rushing towards them and growing even huger and more bright. Every vessel in the town was filled with water, every warrior was armed, every arrow and dart was ready, and the bridge to the land was thrown down and destroyed before the roar of Smaug's terrible approach, and the lake rippled red as fire beneath the awful beating of his wings. Amid the shrieks and wailing and the shouts of men, he came over them, swept towards the bridges, and was foiled. The bridge was gone, and his enemies were on an island in deep water. Roaring, he swept back over the town. A hail of arrows leapt up and snapped and rattled on his scales and jewels, and their shafts fell back, kindled by his breath, burning and hissing into the lake. At the twanging of the bows and the shrilling of the trumpets, the dragon's wrath blazed to its height, till he was blind and mad with it. No one had dared to give battle to him for many an age, nor would they have dared now if it had not have been for Bard, who ran to and fro, cheering on the archers and urging the master to order them to fight to the last arrow. Back swirled the dragon, a sweep of his tail, and the roof of the great house crumbled and smashed down. Flames, unquenchable, sprang high into the night. Another swoop, and another house, and then another sprang afire and fell, and still no arrow hindered Smaug or hurt him more than a fly from the marshes. Weapons were flung down. There was mourning and weeping, where but a little time ago the old songs of mirth to come had been sung about the dwarves. Now men cursed their names. The master himself was turning to his great gilded boat, hoping to row away in the confusion and save himself. Soon all the town would be deserted and burned down to the surface of the lake. That was the dragon's hope. They could all get into boats for all he cared. Let them try to get to land and he would be ready. He was enjoying the sport of town baiting more than he had enjoyed anything for years. But there was still a company of archers that held their ground among the burning houses. Their captain was Bard, grim voice and grim-faced. He was a descendant in the long line of Girion, Lord of Dale, whose wife and child had escaped down the running river from the ruin long ago. Now he shot with a great yew bow, till all his arrows but one were spent. He bent his bow for the last time. Suddenly, out of the dark, something fluttered to his shoulder. He started, but it was only an old thrush. Unafraid, it perched by his ear, and it brought him news. "Wait. Wait. The moon is rising. Look for the hollow of the left breast as he flies and turns above you." Then Bard drew his bowstring to his ear. The dragon was circling back, flying low, and as he came, the moon rose above the eastern shore and silvered his great wings.
"Arrow," said the bowman. "Black arrow. I have saved you to the last. You have never failed me, and always I have recovered you. I had you from my father, and he from of old. If ever you came from the forges of the true king under the mountain, go now and speed well." The dragon swooped once more, lower than ever. The great bow twanged. The black arrow sped straight from the string, straight for the hollow by the left breast where the foreleg was flung wide. In it smote and vanished, barb, shaft and feather, so fierce was its flight. With a shriek, Smaug shot spouting into the air, turned over and crashed down from on high in ruin. Full on the town he fell. His last throw splintered it to sparks and gleeds. The lake roared in. A vast steam leapt up, white in the sudden dark under the moon. There was a hiss, a gushing swirl. Then silence. And that was the end of Smaug and Esgaroth. From many boats dotted on the surface of the lake came voices of people lamenting their lost town and their first complaints and anger against the master who had left the town so soon, while some were still willing to defend it. "He may have had a good head for business, especially his own, but he's no good when anything serious happens." And they praised the courage of Bard and his last mighty shot. "If only he had not been killed," they all said, "we would make him a king. Bard, the dragon shooter of the line of Gideon. Alas that he is lost." In the very midst of their talk, a tall figure stepped from the shadows. He was drenched with water. His black hair hung wet over his face and shoulders, and a fierce light was in his eyes.
"Bard is not lost. I am Bard of the line of Gideon. I am the slayer of the dragon."
"King Bard! King Bard!" they shouted, and the master ground his chattering teeth.
"Gideon was lord of Dale, not king of Esgaroth. In the lake town, we have always elected masters from among the old and wise, and have not endured the rule of mere fighting men. Let King Bard go back to his own kingdom. Dale is now freed by his valor, and nothing hinders his return."
"We will have King Bard," the people near at hand shouted in reply. "We have had enough of the old men and the money counters."
People further off took up the cry.
"Up the bowmen and down the money bags."
"I am the last man to undervalue Bard the bowman. He has tonight earned an eminent place in the history of our town, and he is worthy of many imperishable songs. But why, O people, why do I get all the blame? Who aroused the dragon from his slumber? Who led us to believe that old songs could come true? What sort of gold have they sent down the river to reward us? Dragon fire and ruin! From whom should we claim the recompense of our damage and aid for our widows and orphans?"
The result of his words was that for the moment the people quite forgot their idea of a new king and turned their angry thoughts towards Thorin and his company. Wild and bitter words were shouted from many sides.
"Fools," said Bard, "why waste words and wrath on those unhappy creatures? Doubtless they perished first in fire before Smaug came to us. This is no time for angry words, master. There is work to do. I serve you still."
He strode off to help in the ordering of the camps and in the care of the sick and the wounded. Probably most of them would have perished in the winter that now hurried after autumn, if help had not been to hand. The Elven King had received news from his own messengers, and already knew much of what had happened. Very great indeed was the commotion among the birds that dwelt on the borders of the desolation of the dragon. Far over Mirkwood tidings spread. "Smaug is dead." Even before the Elven King rode forth, the news had passed west right to the pine woods of the Misty Mountains. Beorn had heard it in his wooden house, and the goblins were at council in their caves.
"That will be the last we shall hear of Thorin Oakenshield, I fear," said the King. "He would have done better to have remained my guest. It is an ill wind all the same," he added, "that blows no one any good."
So it was that Bard's messengers found him now marching with many spearmen and bowmen, and crows were gathered thick above him, for they thought that war was awakening again, such as had not been in those parts for a long age. But the king, when he received the prayers of Bard, had pity, for he was the lord of a good and kindly people. So turning his march, he hastened now down the river to the Long Lake. Only 5 days after the death of the dragon, they came upon the shore,
and looked upon the ruins of the town. Their welcome was great, and the men and their master were ready to make any bargain for the future in return for the Elven King's aid. So it was that all the men of arms who were still able, and the most of the Elven King's array, got ready to march north to the mountain.